Are you Invictus? Clint, are you Invictus? Are you Invictus?
What does it mean?
You know, when I started the Invictus Mind podcast, my goal was to unite a bunch of people who had a similar ideology or a similar characteristic traits. Invictus means unconquerable. It's an old Greek word for means unconquerable.
Unconquerable.
So, to be totally honest, it was a new concept to me. I had to Google it when you sent it to me. But yeah, I do my best.
Tell me about what the show, what is your audience looking for? Tell me.
This is your first time here. This is the number one program dedicated to helping individuals maximize their potential and truly become unconquerable. Here we have discussions about what it takes and what it means to experience and magnify political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
Yes, I would absolutely say that. I'm going to keep getting up, right? And I keep getting up and I keep pushing forward. And that's the type of mindset that you need to have.
I never lose hope. I never lose faith. My mindset has always been, if I want something, I don't give up.
So let me tell you what is the number one issue when it comes to being unconquerable.
Okay.
And the number one word you have to think about here is not intelligence, not savvy, not strength, none of those things. The number one thing is resilience.
You know I'm Invictus. Come on. All right. I'm Invictus AF.
Well, may I have an initiation question for my tribe?
Okay.
Are you Invictus?
I believe I am.
So yes, I agree. I am Invictus.
I totally agree, man. And I think that if there's anybody on this planet that's unconquerable, it's probably me. I am not the type to take orders, and I am definitely in a position that I can stand up for myself right now. So,
and I was like, no way, I know what that word means now.
yeah, man, very cool concept for a show.
You didn't ask me if I was Invictus.
Welcome everyone to another amazing day. It's sunny, it's warm, and we are in the month of August, what they call the dog days of summer. You have found the Invictus Mind podcast, the number one place to learn about and gain the skills to experience your political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. This is your humble host, Mike Corbell. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this program today. I do appreciate it. If this is your first time here, I hope that we can intrigue you enough to come back. And if you've been here before, then do me a favor and let some of your friends know about this show. Share this on your social media or wherever you network. I do believe that the discussions we have here will make a difference in your life and in the community at large. My aim is to empower people to become unconquerable, to overcome the roadblocks, the challenges, and obstacles that prevent people from reaching their fullest potential and truly live the life they want with the people they love the most. All right, so let's get started. On the program with me today is a guest I wanted to have on because he is doing good things to help people with challenges that are often very personal, usually private, and frankly can be embarrassing to bring forward to others and address. We're going to be talking about addiction recovery. If you caught the episode I had with Wes Carey, we spoke about the need that males have to find good role models, and when they don't, they will often replace those people with poor influences. And that can lead to other avenues of oppression. One line I distinctly remember from that conversation was when we spoke about what liberty means and how the undefined definition for that can lead people to do whatever they want to do, and they often become slaves to their desires and pleasures. Unfortunately, I believe this is true, and the desires could go by another title, and that is vice. Vice is an addiction, and people are addicted to many different things. Drugs, alcohol, and even pornography. And when people are addicted, they are enslaved, which is the very opposite of Invictus. They have been overcome by things that lead to their destruction. So today we're going to get to the root of some of these problems, discuss the challenges facing men and women from these vices, and particularly pornography in all its forms, and then some of the possible programs or treatments that people can use to get them back on track. Now, this will be a sensitive conversation, and it is designed for mature adults, but I think it's very important, so I hope you enjoy it. So let me introduce the man who is here with me. He is a board-certified mental health nurse practitioner who specializes in addiction medicine and recovery programs. His name is Isaiah Cruz. How are you doing today, Isaiah?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I think this is an important topic to go over, and I keep seeing it pop up on various social media you know, platforms, and many people don't really want to admit that addiction is a very problem, is a very big problem in society, and particularly addiction to pornography. But I want to start with some of your story, Isaiah. Once again, we met on podmatch.com, and it's a great place for podcasters to connect with each other. And I just came across your profile and I said, you know, I got to get you on the program because I think that you do have a good message. Why don't you start with a little bit about your background? Tell us how you became a nurse practitioner and why you decided to get into addiction recovery.
Yeah, good. Yeah. So I was an emergency room nurse, ICU nurse. And to be frank, I really didn't like the career. I didn't like being a nurse. It wasn't fun. I was a highly educated waiter is what I was most of the time. And the fun stuff in the ER happened rare. So I wanted to do a little more of the science behind nursing. And that's when I chose to advance my career as a nurse practitioner. And while I was working in the ER, our ER had a psych unit attached to it. So we'd get a lot of dual diagnosis, either people in acute psychosis or people wanting to withdraw from opiates, alcohol, stuff like that. So I became familiar with that clientele. So when I graduated, a job came up and I thought, man, I kind of like those patients. Most people don't go into medicine saying, yeah, I'm going to work with addiction medicine. So I had some exposure to it. I was like, you know what? I don't mind it. I kind of like that crowd. And then with the opiate epidemic, I'd rather be a part of the solution than the problem. So that's kind of what spawned me. I started in 2016 at an opiate addiction clinic and did opiate and alcohol addiction, heroin addiction, stuff like that. And how I got into pornography is treating alcohol addiction with naltrexone medication. And in about a 1 month span, I had about five guys tell me, I'm no longer taking this for alcohol. It keeps me away from porn. Mm. And I thought, man, that's brave because it's a pretty shameful addiction. I'd rather be admit I'm addicted to alcohol than pornography. So then I thought, how many people are taking this for porn and not telling me? So then I started researching. There's several medical studies done on this medication for internet sex addiction, things like that. So then I wanted to look up some resources for my patients so I can give it to them. I couldn't find a single person prescribing this medication for pornography addiction. So I talked to a colleague of mine and we decided to be that person. So we partnered with a telemedicine agency and we provide pornography addiction treatment in all 50 states. We do the medicine aspect only. Mm. Obviously, medicine's not for everybody. But if you've tried and failed to quit pornography, it may be an option for you.
Yeah, and I definitely want to address some of the medicine because there's a lot of controversy and questions about that avenue as far as treatment.
Yeah.
But, your title is a nurse practitioner. How does that differ? So you're not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but what exactly, how does that differ?
That's a good question because there is a lot of gray area in that. So I'm a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, so I can prescribe just about everything a psychiatrist can, with some exceptions. And then I'm also able to provide mental health therapy, psychotherapy, just like a psychologist can. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix between the both of those.
I gotcha. Okay. So, you know, you said you found yourself into addiction recovery. Now, mm-hmm. On this show, we talk about what it means to be Invictus. That word means unconquerable. And, addiction is one of those obstacles that people have that, if they have an addiction, that means that they don't have their free will at hand. And, they are no longer unconquerable, but they have been conquered. They have been defeated often by very pernicious things.
Yeah.
So, we could talk a little bit about drugs and alcohol, but, pornography is your specialty.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the most pernicious, and you mentioned probably secretive or embarrassing addiction that people have because they don't really want to come out and say, I'm addicted to pornography, right? I don't know. Maybe it's a pride thing. Maybe it's just, like I said, it's an embarrassment. But it's one thing to tell people, yeah, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm going through treatment or I had a drug addiction and, I sought treatment for that. But how many people really want to say, I was addicted to pornography?
Right. You're labeled as a pervert.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that has affected men and is still affecting men. And I'm sure that you work with only men or with women too.
Oh, absolutely. It affects women as well.
Okay. And why would you think, why do you think that this is such a pernicious addiction to have?
I call it the three A's: affordability, accessibility, and anonymity. And those three combined makes for the perfect storm. Yeah, it's so if you're addicted to alcohol, eventually, yeah, you're going to show some signs, some objective signs that you're intoxicated. Well, if you're using porn every day, who's going to know? Mm. Nobody. There's no outside objective signs of it. And it's the damaging. The next question to answer is, why is pornography wrong, or is it wrong? I've been on several different podcasts. One guy said, there's nothing wrong with pornography. I watch it. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm like, well, I'm not here to tell you it's right or wrong. That's not my job. But there are some objective things a person should know about pornography to make a better decision. So according to the National Human Trafficking Hotline, pornography is the third leading cause of sex trafficking. So if you watch pornography, there's a good chance some of those people participating, it was against their will. And then how does that make you feel? Are you okay with that?
Right, right. So pornography is one of those things that eats away at a person's self-esteem, right? Okay. And they look at the opposite sex, or, you know, maybe even same sex attraction. They start experimenting in places that could lead them down roads that cause further trouble. It's one of those things. Now, obviously, being a man, we have to admit that at one time, probably every single man has seen or used pornography at some point. And I'm going back to my childhood. And I remember that, you know, when we had access to it, it was because we had an older brother or a cousin, or, somehow we came across some magazines or VHS types, stuff like that. So, but it wasn't one of those things that was easily accessible, right? Because it kind of was embarrassing. You wouldn't want to go into a 7-Eleven or into one of your video stores, into the adult section, and then have to face the clerk saying, I'm buying this stuff. But so it was one of those things that was done in secret. But nowadays, it's very easy to just click a button on your phone and there it is, and it pops up right in front of you.
And that's one of the issues. When we were kids, it was hard to find. And you would have to go to that weird uncle's house and look under the cabinet to find his Playboys.
Right.
And then, so that's one, the access to it, any internet access, you have it. Two is the content being produced. You know, a Playboy magazine, a topless woman, is way different from the pornography produced today that, you know, 11-year-old children have access to. 11 is the average age of first exposure in the United States. And by age 14, 94% of kids will be exposed to porn.
Oh, wow. Wow. So have you seen an increase in this usage since the age of the internet, or just in your studies?
Yeah, I haven't been doing it as long. So about 2 years now. But yeah, there has been some studies. COVID was a huge participating factor. People working from home, internet access and boredom, all kinds of stuff.
Sure. And that makes sense when you lock everybody inside and they don't have an opportunity to go out there and socialize. Yeah. I've listened to some other content, some other podcasts where they talk about just the change on the dating scene particularly.
Yeah.
Right. People are not getting out there and socializing with each other. And so they're staying inside. And then, of course, they say that, you know, idle hands is the devil's playground. Right. So they find themselves looking at things that they shouldn't. Right. But it seems to be so prevalent in today's world. Like, you just turn on Facebook and then all of a sudden there's suggestive images and suggestive ideas. And it seems to be like just out in the open, so prevalent than it has been in the past. Why do you think that is?
That is a good question. It boils down to sex sells. It attracts people. And one interesting statistic I found was children age, or I guess adults age 18 to 24 view not recycling as more immoral than pornography. So it's becoming mainstream. Younger generations aren't seeing an issue with this. It's just pornography. It is what it is. And, you know, I started watching it when I was 11. Like, It's nothing. It's just a part of their life.
And why is it an addiction?
That is a good question. That's the one number one question I get is, one, some people say, you know what, this is an addiction. It is not an addiction. Other people say it is. And then the bigger question is, how do I know if I'm addicted? At what point is it an addiction? So to answer that question, you have to define what an addiction is. So there's different ways to define it. I define it as this: doing something that's harmful to you, wanting to stop, but being unable to. So you have to identify, how is pornography harming me? Well, one, we know it's harming some individuals in the sex trafficking trade, right? So and that's going to harm yourself indirectly. But directly, pornography contributes to premature ejaculation, contributes to erectile dysfunction. Pornography separates sex from intimacy, so it causes problems in the relationship. Then continued pornography use, a person starts to view another person as an object, something to be used without the intimacy. So those are different ways how a person is affected by pornography, and oftentimes they don't even really realize it. So pornography addiction can be anybody from watching porn all day, every day, to watching porn once a month or less. It does, based on the addiction, the definition of addiction I said earlier, and it can be the guy who knows it's wrong. For example, a good church going guy, played in the worship band. He would watch pornography once, not even once a month, once every 3 months, mess up, hate himself for it, swear he'll never do it again. And then a month later slips up again. Well, this went on for 10 years. And at some point you got to call it an addiction, right? And the medication ended up helping him. But most, when I say porn addiction, most people think of, oh yeah, the guy who sits at his computer all day, every day. Well, that's right. Not necessarily the truth. It could be once a week or less.
Sure, sure. And so, you know, obviously when you talk about addiction in general, you know, we can talk, going back to drugs and alcohol, we can talk about the physical ailments you have from an alcohol addiction, right? You act out in public, you might become violent or aggressive, you might be an inside addicted person who was just, drinks alone, right? That famous song, right. George Strait, "I Drink Alone," right? And so you might not go out into social activities because you are drinking alcohol or doing drugs. But you mentioned pornography is one of those things that, you know, we're not going to talk about the guy who's sitting at home all day long. That's right. Obviously, there's probably deeper problems than just the pornography, sure. Why he's not going out into public.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's one of those things that, you know, that particularly men, because, you know, that's just what I'm aware of it. You can maybe share some stories about how women have issues as well, but men will stay home, or, you know, they'll go out for, you know, a quick pick me up. There's something about that addiction to pornography that, you know, that solves a problem. I mean, what is it, a chemical in the brain? Is it just visual stimulation? What is it that, you know, causes that problem in the first place biologically? And what do people go to that pornography to, you know, to try to solve?
Yeah. You solve a problem. It's an endorphin release. It all boils down to sex. Sex is a good thing, right? And that's the enjoyment you get out of it. But, and like I said earlier, pornography separates the intimacy from it. So that's one of the issues. But and that's actually why the medication naltrexone works. Naltrexone reduces the endorphin release from external stimuli. Okay. So, you know, you open your computer to send an email for work. Well, it's this Pavlovian effect. Your brain says, open computer, I watch porn. So automatically it's already starting to release endorphins and giving you intrusive thoughts about porn. Like you're not even planning on it. And then all of a sudden these images start popping in your head. Well, the medication that I use stops that. So it reduces the intensity and frequency of intrusive thoughts, and it stops that endorphin release from external stimuli. So people use pornography for all different reasons. Anxiety control, because that the release of endorphins causes a relaxing feeling. And it's for boredom, loneliness, anxiety, insomnia. These are all reasons that people will turn to porn, because it works. It solves the problem. And it just does that in an unhealthy way.
Yeah. You mentioned endorphin rushes, and you know, I'm thinking about the most common of these is dopamine, right?
Right.
That's the chemical that they say that triggers addictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you see that not only in drugs and alcohol, but simple things like using your cell phone, you get that notification buzz going off, right?
Right.
That dopamine. But then again, like I said, when you're scrolling on your social media and Twitter or on Facebook, you know, you'll see suggestive images that, you know, trigger that endorphin in your brain and say, oh wow, okay, so it's just like a reminder that they do that.
Right.
So it definitely becomes a problem just getting that dopamine hit, right? It may not even be just the pornography itself, but just something that triggers in our mind. Why are people so addicted to that dopamine rush?
Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing. When you hug your kids, hug your loved ones, that's a dopamine release, and that's a good dopamine release. Mm-hmm. So it's what stimulates human behavior is dopamine. So it's not a bad thing. Now, what happens in addiction is something called dopamine downregulation. Mm. And that is the negative issues. It's kind of a combination of a building a tolerance to and a reduction in release of dopamine. So you watch pornography for the first time. That's the greatest thing that ever happened to you. So you want to repeat that. You get a huge dopamine spike. After doing it 100 times, nothing. So what do? You go to the more hardcore stuff. And it's because you need that novelty to get your brain excited to release more dopamine.
Okay.
So before you know it, you're getting into more and more hardcore. That's how people get into the illegal stuff. But even if you're not, a lot of people who are addicted to porn, they find themselves using pornography that they would have considered too hardcore or even gross to them when they first started. And that's how they get there. But so your body releases this much dopamine, a large amount of dopamine when viewing pornography. So when you go to hug your family members, your body releases a lot less dopamine.
Okay.
So the tolerance your body builds to the dopamine is a lot lower. So you get less pleasure out of doing the good things in life.
Sure. Sure.
Hugging family members, things like that. So then the person becomes more and more depressed related to this dopamine downregulation.
Okay. Now you mentioned that it inhibits intimacy with, obviously with a partner. Pornography is not just a problem for married people, but for single adults. And you mentioned even children to age 11, so is there something that will be a challenge for let's just call adolescents, right?
Yeah.
Is it more of a pernicious harm for adolescents or for adults or for single or married? How would we differentiate that?
Yeah, there's different problems that they deal with. So, I said before, average age of first exposure is 11, but here's a jaw-dropping statistic. So out of all the kids watching porn, 17 and under, 22% of porn is consumed by children under 10. So that's 8 and 9-year-olds.
Yeah, that's a shame.
It's about 1/5. That's incredible. So the brain, we know the brains aren't fully developed yet. So that's how it's going to alter skew. The way their brains develop, it's going to interrupt their dopamine pathways. It's going to alter their nucleus accumbens, all these reward factors in their brain. It's going to play a role. So that goes all the way up to age 25 is usually when most scientists will say the brain is fully developed at 25. In addition to that, children get their sex education supplemented from pornography. And you and I know enough to know that it ain't real. They call them porn actors and actresses for a reason. This is fake. 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds, they don't know that. They think this is how it is. And then here's the worst part. 9 out of 10 pornography videos contain aggression or violence towards women. Mm. So it's teaching the men that women like this. They like being roughed up. And it's teaching women, girls, this is what men want. This is okay. This is acceptable because I've seen it's on every video I watch. And that's just not okay.
So children are growing up thinking this is normal, this is right, and this is how you engage in a relationship with a female. And the females are like, whoa, wait a minute here. That's not what we want. We want something else. We want that intimacy. We want that romance, but we want to slow down a little bit.
But at 15, 16, 17, are women are the young women mature enough and have the words to express that? Mm. They see porn, they're like, okay, this is what the guys like. The girl seems to like it. So if I don't like it, there must be something wrong with me. Maybe I should have to like this. And it's acceptable. And I'm not one to judge. If you're into that stuff, I'm not going to judge you. But for the most part, most women don't like being roughed up in sex. They like the intimacy. Yeah. Most guys too. And it's a connection point for people. And it's an intimate act. It's not supposed to be a novel.
Okay. And so you mentioned that, you know, the girls will start questioning whether this is normal for them to act a certain way, right?
Right.
And so in your experience, is there more of a problem with men, or do you see women also, you know, being addicted and craving this as much as, for lack of a better word, horny young men do?
Yeah. Well, obviously there is a gender gap. So stereotypically, men are addicted to porn. But there's a rising number of women who are addicted to porn, not just the erotica written porn, but it's becoming more and more normal, more and more common for females to engage in consuming pornography.
Okay. You mentioned erotica, and I'm always thinking back to, you know, how women, you know, they read books and they internalize that, but men are very visually stimulated and things like that. So there is a difference there, but, so you see those romance novels that women have, they probably have all the explicit stuff that you can find on in a video, but, you know, it's a little bit different there.
Yeah, it is.
So, okay. So now as far as like, you know, the difference between single adults and married adults, you know, are you seeing a problem between people who have partners and whether they're married or they have significant others or versus being single? Where is it more heavily a problem?
Both. Because here's the thing. When you're single, you're like, oh, I'm going to stop once I get married. That's going to solve all my porn problems because I can get sex all day, every day, whenever I want. And that just doesn't happen. And so then they get frustrated because their spouse isn't readily giving them sex whenever they want, nor should they. So then they turn to pornography, which causes a gap in intimacy, which causes frustration. And then oftentimes guys will, or girls, both, I'll say guys, but I mean both genders, will want to try stuff that they see in porn with their partner.
Right.
Some, and a lot of the times their partner sees it as degrading and they don't want to do that.
Sure.
And, or they do it, but they don't love it and they feel degraded, and that causes more problems. So it's both a single and a married person problem.
Yeah. And so, like I said, if you're addicted to something like pornography, you know, it'll definitely lower your self-esteem, lower your intimacy factor. Maybe you might have an argument with your spouse or something like that, or you don't feel so attractive. You don't feel as a male that you're owning up to your responsibility and, you know, doing what it takes to, you know, romanticize your wife, your spouse. So then, you know, you might fall back to using pornography, and then you're satisfied sexually. And so you won't actually, you know, do what you need to do with your spouse. So then it drives an even further gap in that intimacy and in a romance and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to talk about your specialty, which is in medicinal treatment, but what are some of the other things that people can do if they feel that they have an addiction to pornography? I mean, really any kind of addiction, but what are some of the steps that people do? Do you recommend counseling? Do you recommend, you mentioned church. So, you know, obviously I've seen faith-based programs out there to help this.
Yeah.
What's the first thing that people should do if they wanted to overcome this kind of challenge?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say addiction isn't rocket science. And most people know what they have to do. It's kind of like losing weight. You eat less and exercise, but for some reason, it's so hard to do that. So if somebody is addicted to anything, if they really sit down and think about it, they know what they have to do. Go to counseling. Cognitive behavioral therapy is the gold standard for addiction. Right next to that is a therapy base called motivational interview. This is really good. It's showing really positive results for addictions. And then you have to get an accountability partner or some type of accountability. I hate using the word accountability because it has so much negative aspects to it. Like, I have a problem, so I have to have accountability. I prefer to call it a coach, you know, a life coach, a faith coach, something like that. Sure. Somebody who holds you accountable, and preferably not your spouse, because they don't need that role. And then you have to find a reason to motivate yourself. Why am I doing this? Why do I want to stop porn? Well, how is it going to hurt me? Write those down. Write down the five reasons why you're doing this. And then right beside that, write down the five reasons, or five, what will happen, five things that will happen if I fail. Mm. And that's going to be your motivating factor. So the 12-step program, they have a pretty good, love it or hate it, they do a good job of motivating you. You read the book, big book every day. Your sponsor calls you or you call your sponsor every day. And you have to do something daily to motivate yourself. Anybody who's tried to lose weight, start a new workout program, something, you know, motivation fades after a month or two. Isn't there. So you have to do something to motivate yourself every day. And that's what that does. Just keeping that mindset of, this is why I'm doing this, and this is what I'm after. As far as internet sex addiction, pornography, internet filters are good. Accountability filters are even better because it internet filters can be beaten easily, and it's kind of like white knuckling it. It works until it doesn't. And sure, some of the accountability software, yeah, it can be beat as well, but it changes the way you approach the problem when you know your buddy's going to know that you watched porn.
Sure. Sure. You put some questions into my mind because, you know, you see these ads for internet filters, right? And you said they can be beat. And so, like, you know, I can just imagine you put something on your phone and say, okay, don't let me view these kind of things. And you have some kind of password, but you know the password. So how easy is it to just get around it? Right.
Right.
Whereas if you have somebody else maybe set up the filter and say, okay, put this on my phone, you memorize the password. I don't know anything about it.
Right.
But then having that accountability partner in any kind of addiction, it can be, frankly, a debilitating thing because you have, the first step in any 12-step program is admit you have a problem, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to come out and you have to get past that factor and say, okay, well, I admit I have a problem. Now you got to go tell somebody else about that problem.
Yeah.
And so that can often lead to hesitation, right? No matter what the problem is.
Yeah.
And so now, are there like social groups you can get part of, or, you know, obviously there are various 12-step programs, and I'm a believer of that. I don't know how they function. I've never had to go through one of those programs, but you hear about them all the time, particularly for alcoholism, but the same strategies would apply to any kind of addiction, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Addiction's addiction. And so, you have a Sexaholics Anonymous, SA, and you have, if you're do more faith-based is, can't think of it. there is the faith-based, the word is slipping my mind. There's a lot of different social groups you can get a hold of. It is, you just have to get over the embarrassment of it. And if you have a problem with it, you just got to say, I have a problem with it. And it's never going to be accepted unless we make it accepted. And part of getting over the taboo is just saying, I'm going to be part of the change. And if it means embarrassing myself a little bit, that's okay.
Right. So once you admit you have a problem, you know, once you go see that accountability partner, or you go into that program and you know, you muster up the courage to say, you know, I want to address this because it's hurting me. It's hurting my family. It's, you know, it's something that is preventing me from taking that next step in life. Then you can go ahead and start a program. Now, I want to turn this a little bit to your specialty because you mentioned that there are medications that somebody can take to help them with addiction.
Yeah.
So like I said, when I started, there's a lot of controversy about some of these medications. I'm not a big fan of them myself, you know, but of course I don't really struggle with a lot of addictions and so I've never had to turn to them.
Right.
But the most common of this medication is known as the SSRI type of medication, right? Yeah. So SSRI, what does that stand for?
Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Those are antidepressants. One of the first second generation antidepressants. Very common. About 13% of the population is on an antidepressant. Very normal. There are some goods and bads with it. It's not for everybody. So one of the biggest side effects of SSRIs is sexual dysfunction, decreased libido, difficulty orgasming, difficulty ejaculating. And so we took that side effect and turned it into a positive effect for people struggling with pornography. Now it's used more often for singles who aren't sexually active.
Saints? Is that what you said?
For singles.
Oh, sorry. Singles. I'm sorry.
yeah. Sorry. Singles. The people, we have a lot of people going to like a Christian college, singles, going to Christian colleges, struggling with porn.
Sure.
So this one lowers the libido. If you're single and not sexually active, not a huge deal to have a lower libido.
So, I mean, I guess some of the pushback is that obviously you're looking at medication and trying to replace one type of addiction. Now, are these SSRIs, they can also be addictive as well, correct?
Depends on, I would say no, you do become physically dependent on it. There's a difference between physical dependence and addiction. It goes back to the definition of what is addiction, something okay. that's harmful to you, wanting to quit and being unable to. Well, most of the time we take the medication, most of the time it isn't harmful. You know, some people do have some side effects, and in that case, we stop. SSRIs is one that you should taper off of
okay.
To avoid the discontinuation syndrome. Now, with that said, the discontinuation syndrome isn't life-threatening. It's annoying. You get a little dizzy, we call them little brain zaps. It's like touching your tongue to a 9-volt battery. You get that little zap. And it lasts for anywhere from 1 week to 4 weeks. Nothing lethal. It's kind of annoying. So, you know, people who are having serious side effects, they stop abruptly. That's fine. It's not going to kill you. So you don't become addicted to it, and you do become physically dependent on it. And that's there is a difference between that. But yeah, medication is controversial. And the biggest thing I say, you're replacing one drug for another, especially when I did heroin addiction. That was a huge misconception. I'm replacing one drug for another. Well, no, you're not. And why? Because this is in regards to heroin addiction. We know that medication like Suboxone, it is a partial opiate agonist. So it attaches to the opioid receptor, but it doesn't release the endorphins like heroin does. Okay. So it's keeping you out of withdrawal while not releasing that endorphin release. Because what happens with any addiction is that the dopamine pathways, well, a CAT scan of the brain, a CAT scan of an addict's brain, they physically look different. It changes the chemical makeup of your brain. Mm-hmm. Pornography addiction is the same way. CAT scan of, and the changes in the brain mimic those of a cocaine addict and for pornography. So some people will argue that pornography is even more addictive than cocaine because it's free and it's accessible all the time.
Sure.
So, but going back to our medication, I would say medication is a tool. You still have to do all the hard work. It just so happens jobs are easier when you have the right tools for the right jobs. So going back to the CAT scan of the brain, people who are smarter than me did a lot of studies. The changes in the brain, it takes about 1 to 2 years to heal for your brain of being sober, for your brain to destroy all those old pathways, create new healthy pathways. So for that reason, I typically recommend being on the medication for about a year. Some people 6 months, some people 2 years. But that will allow your brain to heal itself. So right now, somebody who's a compulsive pornography user, that's all they think about. When I'm anxious, porn pops into my head. When I'm stressed, porn pops into my head. When I get off of work, because it's a habit, porn pops into my head.
Yeah.
So we need. So some people need this medication for a limited time to help help heal their brain, to help destroy those compulsive patterns in their brain. Once those are destroyed, it's going to be easy. Those intrusive thoughts are going to be less frequent and less intrusive. And it's going to be easier for them to say no to porn. And it's not going to, those intrusive thoughts won't be there as much.
Yeah. But if somebody recovers from an addiction to pornography, right? But isn't it often that they can replace one addiction with another addiction?
Yeah. Addiction and transfer. We see that a lot.
Yeah, addiction transfer. And so obviously the root of the problem is not just the chemical itself, but just, you know, what causes all these addictions in the first place.
Right. And that's where therapy comes in. Like, why am I using this? Why am I drinking so much? Am I treating some undiagnosed anxiety? Did I have some childhood trauma? Is like, what's going on that caused you to drink in the first place? And what's going on to cause you the first year to watch porn? Well, a lot of the times these kids at age 11, 12, 13 start watching porn, liked it. That's the only reason they like it. But now they use it to help them sleep, use it to help them relax after a stressful day. And so that's where therapy comes in. I'm a huge fan of therapy. Medication doesn't replace therapy. And some people won't need medication. They'll just need therapy and that's it. But for the people who are, we use it for a couple different reasons. People who are ready to lose everything. You know, their wife caught them using porn. Wife is going to leave them. They watch porn. 20% of men have watched porn at work. You know, your work caught you watching porn. You're on probation now. You're going to lose your wife and your job if you don't stop porn. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and throw everything at it. Let's get you into counseling. Let's get you the medication. You need to save your life here. And then the flip side of that is the guy I said earlier who has watched porn once a month, not like it, try not to, but have been doing it for 10 years. All right. So it hasn't worked in 10 years. Let's go ahead and try something new.
Sure. Now, obviously, there's different types of medications you prescribe. And I was just reading a little bit about them, you know, but one of the things that's sticking out to me is it says that they're not generally approved for children or adolescents. And so can we go through a couple of the different types of medications that are most common that people use for this type of thing?
Yeah. So in my research, two main medications stuck out, the SSRI category and then a medication called naltrexone. Naltrexone is FDA approved for opiate addiction, alcohol addiction. We kind of talked about it earlier. It helps to limit that endorphin release. Now, pediatrics and medication is a very hard subject because it's hard to run clinical trials on pediatrics. Who wants to sign up their child for a new drug, right?
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
Let somebody else do that. So for that reason, there's not very many studies about this for pediatrics. And realistically, for that reason and malpractice reasons, our business, we can't treat pediatrics because the malpractice on it is so high and because we're using it off-label. It hurts my heart to know that a lot of these kids are struggling. And sure, as teenagers, you know, medication will be the last resort. Let's get these kids into therapy first.
Right.
But if they're in deep and they need medication, it breaks my heart that we can't give it to them.
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, one of the pushbacks I have about medication, not just that you're replacing one thing for another, but particularly, and I don't want to get too political here, but particularly over the last year, there's a lot of skepticism that I have generated just about the pharmaceutical industry itself. You know, there's a lot of money involved in pushing medication on the people. It seems like every commercial you see on TV is about some kind of drug that, you know, solves some kind of problem. And I'm just a big proponent is like, you got to get to the underlying root of these problems.
Sure.
And so, you know, obviously in the industry that you're in, you know, you've done lots of studies as far as whether medications work and whether they don't. You know, what are some of the other opinions that people have about this type of treatment?
Yeah. So is my treatment or just big pharma in general?
Just big pharma in general. I mean, do you get a lot of pushback? Well, you know, I don't really want to be on a medication. I don't want to take that. I'm very skeptical about that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe you can say, you know, how do you overcome some of those objections? How do you address when somebody says, you know, I have a problem with alcoholism or with drug addiction or with pornography, but I'm not very comfortable taking medication, even though, you know, I understand that you're telling me it's working in such a way, but you know, how would you address those objections?
Yeah. So that's a very common answer I get. And I agree. You know, if I could live my life and not be on any medication, great, all for it. But not everybody lives in a perfect world. And as far as big pharma goes, you have life-saving medications, then you have lifestyle medications and stuff to just enhance your life. And I get the big pharma question often. And I always say, is it big pharma or is it our society who doesn't like to be in pain, who wants everything comfortable, who isn't willing to work hard to achieve their goals? Just give me a pill to solve my problem.
Yeah.
Which one came first? Don't know. So then with our medication, for people who say, you know, I'm not ready to take medication. Great. I'm okay with that. I'm not here to try to sell you anything. I'm offering something. Let's get you into therapy. Then I'll say, has therapy worked for you? If yes, if I haven't tried it, well, yeah, that's first line treatment. If you've tried it, well, how long have you been in therapy? Have you tried different therapists? And you know, I've tried 3-4 therapists for 3 years, still not working. Well, at some point you got to go do the old Dr. Phil thing. How's this working for you? It's not. Statistically speaking, with it's called medication assisted treatment, MAT. It's kind of a generic term for all addictions medication treatment. Mm-hmm. AA, great, 12-step program, great. They have about a 4% success rate over 3 years. Mm. MAT has about a 50% success rate over the same 3 years.
Okay.
So you got to go where the evidence shows. Evidence-based practice says medication works. And if you're not ready for it, that's fine. I'm not going to push anything on anybody. But if you look at the evidence, there is some evidence behind this.
Sure. And so, obviously, you have a program or a website where people can come find you, or?
Yeah, so we have a telemedicine website, no-x.net. No X, you can search that, it should come up. If you have any questions, you go to our store, you can click on my calendar, you can schedule a 10-minute meeting with me for free, no obligations. We can talk about, I can explain more about the medications. We are treating patients in all 50 states. You just sign up there, create an account, answer your medical questionnaire. Depending on what state you live in, a physician or nurse practitioner will call you. Okay. Some states don't require that and they'll just send it.
Now, you said you work in all 50 states. So now, do you have developed relationships with other types of counseling too? That because obviously, I think that the thing that I want to address the most is that probably counseling, some kind of addiction recovery program is on top of with the medication is probably the best solution.
Absolutely.
So, since you said only 4% of counseling is actually works, but then 50% of the medication statistically is actually working. So you must be a believer that, as much help that people can get, from everywhere. I like that it's online, that you can, just get on the computer and you work through like a Zoom, you sit down and you talk to somebody and say, hey, what are you dealing with and how can I help you?
Yeah. So we decided we're to just do the medicine aspect of things.
Okay.
Counseling is needed. I'm 100% on board with counseling. One, it's the first line treatment. Two, if you are on medication, you should be in counseling as well. But there's all kinds of counselors everywhere who are good at their job and probably better at it than I am. So that's why we chose to just do the medicine, because nobody else is doing it. So I wanted to offer something that nobody else is. So nationally, you have Sexaholics Anonymous. Celebrate Recovery is the faith-based one that I couldn't think of earlier. That one's in almost every state, every church. And you have, you just search pornography addiction therapy. And you're going to have some of the telemedicine providers like BetterHelp Now, Cerebral. They're all nationwide telemedicine providers who will do the therapy side of things.
Okay. Sure. Now you have, obviously, I don't want to ask you to tell me any specific stories about patients, but I'm sure you've had some satisfaction with some of your recovering patients.
Yeah.
And have they come to you and they said, hey, thank you, Isaiah. You're not a doctor, right? You're a nurse practitioner.
They wouldn't say thank you, doctor.
But they come to you and they say, thank you. You've really helped me. This has saved my marriage. I really appreciate that. You get referrals that way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been doing this for about 2 years in-person private practice. And then most recently, this past year, we decided to go nationwide. Mm-hmm. So the nationwide, we hired a third-party telemedicine agency because I don't have all 50 state licenses. So for that, I don't get a whole lot of feedback because oftentimes I'm not the one prescribing it. But in my own practice, yes, that happens often. And most people are pleasantly surprised that most people don't believe it's going to work. I'm on my last leg. Let's go ahead and try it. And then they come back surprised on how well it actually works. And that's my biggest surprise I get is it actually works.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's great. I'm all for helping people overcome whatever addiction, whatever pernicious thing is destroying their true potential.
Yeah.
And, I'm not, like I said, many people listening to this program probably have a lot more questions as far as, some of the medications, some of the other steps that you could have. But definitely, I think that solving this issue is a problem in society at large. Families are being torn apart for a myriad of reasons, and people are just, losing their mind for a myriad of reasons. Self-esteem is, at an all-time low, probably. And so I think that this type of information definitely needs to go out more to the public. So I'm going to ask you one more time where people can find you.
Yeah, no-x.net, no-x.net. We're on social medias as well, so you can look us up there.
Awesome. And any closing thoughts or ideas that you want to share before we leave?
Typically, I like to make sure I talk to the parents out there. Know what your kids are watching. Get internet filters. Don't give them unlimited access to the internet. Unmonitored access to the internet. We know they're going to be exposed to it. Sit down and talk to your kids. It's starting at 8, 9, 10. Define what is pornography. Give them the vocabulary they need. And then tell them what you expect out of them if they are exposed to it. So you got to be active and give them a good sex education so they're not looking elsewhere for their sex education.
That's great advice. I appreciate that. So I want to thank you for your time today.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. And, you know, people know where to find you now. And, you know, hopefully we can solve this problem one person at a time. So.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.